Repatriation math, when leaving the cloud is the fiscally responsible choice. A handful of high-profile companies have moved workloads off the public cloud and reported saving millions. Is repatriation a real financial strategy or a fashion? Here is the framework finance should use to tell the difference for its own workloads. For 15 years, move to the cloud was treated as a direction rather than a decision. The migration was assumed to pay for itself through elasticity, reduced operational burden, and the disappearance of capital expenditure. For many workloads it did. But a growing number of engineering-led companies have started running the arithmetic in reverse, moving steady, predictable workloads back onto hardware they own, and publishing the savings. The reported figures are large enough that finance leaders can no longer wave repatriation away as contrarian theater. The mistake would be to treat repatriation as the new default the way cloud migration once was. It is not a movement to join or resist. It is a unit economics question with a clear answer for some workloads and a clear rejection for most others. The job of finance is to know which is which before an opinion hardens into a strategy. What the public examples actually show. The savings are real, but they are specific. The companies reporting large repatriation savings tend to share three traits. Their workloads are steady and predictable rather than spiky, they run at high, sustained utilization, and they had the internal engineering competence to operate infrastructure without rebuilding a data center team from scratch. Under those conditions, the marginal cost of a server you own drops toward the cost of power and space, while the cloud continues to bill a rate that includes the provider's margin, elasticity you are not using, and managed services you may not need. Elasticity you do not use is a premium you still pay. The public cloud's central value proposition is the ability to scale up and down on demand. For a workload that never scales down, that flexibility is a feature you are renting and leaving in the box. The reported repatriation wins are, in essence, companies noticing that they were paying an insurance premium against variability their workload does not have. These are not general purpose endorsements. The same companies that repatriated a core workload frequently keep other workloads in the cloud precisely because those others are variable, geographically distributed, or dependent on managed services that would be expensive to reproduce. The headline "left the cloud" almost always means moved one class of workload, not abandoned the model. The workload profile that favors owning: steady baseline, not spiky peaks. The single strongest predictor is the shape of the demand curve. A workload that hums along at a consistent level around the clock is the classic candidate. It never exploits the cloud's elasticity, so it pays for flexibility it never uses. A workload with sharp, unpredictable peaks is the opposite. Owning enough hardware to survive the peak means paying for idle capacity the rest of the time, which is exactly the inefficiency the cloud solved. High and sustained utilization. Owned infrastructure only beats rented infrastructure when the fixed cost of buying it is spread across heavy use. A server at 20% utilization is expensive no matter who owns it. The repatriation case strengthens as sustained utilization rises, because that is what amortizes the capital outlay. Heavy data gravity. Workloads that store and process very large volumes of data are penalized twice in the cloud, once for the storage, and again for the transfer if the data needs to move. When the data is the center of gravity and it is not going anywhere, the economics of keeping it on own storage improve markedly. Predictable growth. Owning hardware means committing to a capacity plan. That is a liability for a workload whose growth is uncertain and an advantage for one whose trajectory is well understood, because predictable growth can be provisioned efficiently rather than over-provisioned defensively. The costs the enthusiast case tends to omit. People are the largest hidden line. The cloud bill is visible, the salaries of the team required to operate owned infrastructure are not, until you need them. A credible repatriation model must fully load the cost of the staff who will handle hardware procurement, capacity planning, patching, physical security, and the on-call burden of failures that the provider used to absorb. For a small organization, this line alone can erase the infrastructure saving. Resilience must be rebuilt, not assumed. Redundancy, multi-site failover, and disaster recovery are quietly included in the cloud's price. Reproducing them on owned infrastructure means buying and operating a second set of everything. A repatriation model that compares one owned data center against a multi-region cloud footprint is not comparing like with like, and the corrected comparison is far less flattering. Capital is committed, and commitment has a cost. Moving from OPEX to CAPEX changes the shape of the risk. Rented capacity can be turned off, owned capacity is a sunk cost that depreciates whether or not the workload still needs it. The financial model has to account for the hardware refresh cycle, the depreciation schedule, and the opportunity cost of the capital tied up, not merely the sticker price of the servers. Migration is expensive and one-directional in the short run. The act of moving a workload out has its own cost in engineering time and risk, and it is not easily reversed once the cloud footprint is decommissioned. This is a one-time expense that must be amortized against the projected savings before the decision clears. The honest framework. Compare fully loaded totals over a multi-year horizon. The only valid comparison is total cost of ownership against total cost of ownership over the useful life of the hardware, with people, resilience, depreciation, and migration all included on the own side, and any negotiated discounts and committed use savings included on the cloud side. A comparison of the cloud bill against the hardware invoice alone is not a decision, it is a headline. Decide per workload, never per company. The crossover point sits in a different place for every workload because demand shape, utilization, data gravity, and growth all differ. A blanket repatriate or stay policy will be wrong for a meaningful fraction of the estate. The unit of decision is the workload. Bank the leverage even when you stay. A rigorous repatriation analysis has value even if the answer is to remain in the cloud, because a credible, costed alternative is the strongest possible position in a renewal negotiation. The provider's discount ceiling rises the moment leaving becomes demonstrably feasible. The analysis pays for itself as procurement leverage regardless of the outcome. Beware the fashion in both directions. Migrating everything because cloud is the future was a category error. Repatriating everything because a few companies publish savings would be the same error wearing different clothes. The defensible position is neither loyalty to a model nor rebellion against it, but a willingness to run the numbers for each workload and follow them. Repatriation is not a repudiation of the cloud, and it is not a universal saving waiting to be claimed. It is a signal that the era of treating cloud as an unquestioned default is over, and that the workload-level unit economics finance should have been examining all along finally have a seat at the table. The companies that win are not the ones that pick a side. They are the ones that can tell you, workload by workload, exactly where the crossover sits. Cost. Defender gives finance a read-only, resource and tag-level view of AWS spend and utilization. The cloud side inputs a credible buy versus rent comparison depends on, so repatriation decisions start from real usage data rather than headlines.